This podcast is brought to you by Homul Casino Resort, the player's place.
I like this tweet from Barely Bacon. It says, you know, Padres baseball's been good lately. When we lose one game and arguments break out on the air next day. That is true. That is true. I was remarkably calm about... I mean, I was glad Crony was okay, because he did almost a full flip, landed on his shoulder pretty hard, got up and was fine. Manny got tagged in the face. It could have been insult to its serious injury.
There's that one minor leaguer that one time who did like the flip over the catcher and actually was safe. And the catcher missed it. That's not something you want to be emulating, especially on the big league level.
No, and they've obviously banned, you know, plowing into it. Would have been a perfect time for Jake Cronenworth to plow right through Francisco Alvarez last night, and Manny Machado as well. But it's
in Crony's example,
it's no bueno anymore.
When he's out by that much,
don't you just pull up?
Like, is anyone going to be mad if he just pulls up? I mean, maybe like, he backpedals or tries to get into a pickle. But like, if he just holds up and takes the tag, are we mad at that?
Because
if he flips over the catcher and breaks his collarbone,
you live to fight another day.
I'm super stoked about that.
I think you've got a better chance if you stop like 10 feet out and you go to the catcher. Your shoelace is untied.
Literally. Just do the dance, like the deke. It was crazy.
Baseball coverage on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi, one price, 5 years. Guaranteed Xfinity. Imagine that. And the YouTube chat actually is running a little more in favor of Pauly.
Sure.
Stop sending.
That's not what you want. You don't want your players or your coaches. If you make a mistake in the first inning, whether you're a player or a coach, I need you to be free the rest of the game. I need you to flush it down the crapper and try not to do it again. In the first play is a colossal mistake. It was a colossal mistake send. No one's denying. The second one, little bit closer, probably not a great send.
Two outs versus one out makes a difference.
Makes a difference. And then the third one, Xander ran through his stop sign.
He might have been safe, honestly.
That play was really close.
They didn't challenge it, but I didn't see a really definitive angle.
I need, what's his name? Bob Henley? You want to say Bob Don Henley every time. I want Bob Henley to get down to the heart of the matter.
He is one of the boys of summer.
This is the end of the innocence. All right? The boys of summer need to go out and play baseball. And I want coaches and players to be able to make mistakes.
I wasn't necessarily suggesting that like one mistake in the first inning dictates, you know, changing your philosophy for the rest of the season or anything like that, or even the series for that matter. But I do think context a little bit matters, where you're looking at like, okay, we're tagging this guy up. Maybe instead of making a second straight out at the plate, we hold up and we go for bases loaded and try to keep the thing rolling.
They weren't tagging him up. They were hitting soft bleeders into the outfield that were dropping. So, you know, again, Nando hit the ball hard off of him. The rest were like, boop, boop, which fine, you take
those runs.
You got to cash those in is a good point. And I said at the break, I have so much confidence in this offense lately that I wasn't worried. I thought we'd get those runs back. We didn't. And so it's a bummer.
I was arguing confidence in the offense for the other way. Like
for that
I
inning,
feel like they're going to be able to string some hits together.
Station to station.
Let's not make another out at the plate.
Yeah,
there was in Pauly's kind of side of the argument. There was a very rookie year Tatis vibe where people just kept going on him.
When he
moved out to right field first time, and they just kept going on him.
He
kept throwing him out. And it was like, are they going to learn at some point that you do not? And then they eventually did. I have no doubt that Bob Henley and the Padres knew the scouting report on Marcus Benj pretty well before the game. I don't think it surprised him. 104 on one of his throws though is nuts. I mean, with accuracy at 104. I get that guy on the mound. My goodness gracious, that was very impressive.
QF baby, I don't want to sound that out. Says you might want that, Woods, but it's not even human nature. No, it's not, but it is in the big leagues. For the great ones, right? All the great ones are able to flush an error, a strikeout, a double play, and they, you know why? Because they know they have other opportunities that game to make a difference. And the same goes for Bob Henley.
Carson Benj. Did I say Marcus Benj? Carson Benj.
Carson Benj. Yeah. So you know what I'm saying? Like in the big leagues, it's actually a requirement to be able to flush a bad pitch, a bad at bat, a bad stolen base attempt, a bad error. You have to, or you won't make it.
And remember what Craig Stammen says after the game. is also not necessarily what he's saying to Bob Henley.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Behind the scenes, he may publicly want his team to remain aggressive and not get gun shy. So he's going to say, "Yeah, I like that. I want us to keep doing that." And privately, he's going, "Dude, you know,
what
if he's if Jake Cronenworth doesn't have a read and he's not going, as he said, you get to hold him in that situation." Yeah, and
split
you know,
second decision.
you do make that distinction that sometimes public comments and private comments are different. This all comes. Walker Buehler was terrific. Six innings, just two hits,
man,
two earned runs.
Hate to waste a start.
Two
like
walks
that.
And four strikeouts. Unfortunately, the two hits all came right there in the first inning. One of them was just the most seeing eye bleeder between first and second that scored a run.
Was that what he was upset about?
That's what he said he was upset about, just the seeing eye nature of the hits that he was giving out. There was a video of Walker in the dugout looking like he was yelling at teammates and upset. And he said, yeah, I saw the video. I've heard it's going around. I was mad at the bleeders, and, you know, it wasn't directed at anyone in particular or, you know, feeling like his defense let him down or something like that. He says that's not what it was.
Okay.
Sure looked like he was upset at somebody.
It did. It did.
Yeah. And not at the moment, but...
Kyle Hart danced around a couple of innings at the end to preserve the rest of the Padres' bullpen. Did a nice job. The one part that I was most disappointed with the Padres actually in the game was not getting to the New York Mets bullpen, which is incredibly depleted. They traded away or released most of their bullpen by the trade deadline. So you feel like that is an area where the Padres have a huge advantage. They've been so good in those late innings, seventh, eighth, ninth innings. I still expected, oh yeah, Padres are going to score here in the end. Now that they've got, McClain kind of stabilized and he got pretty nasty for a couple innings, but I was sure at the end, the Padres were going to rally and they just did nothing. I mean, you know, I got the one on and then Tatis hit into the double play, which hurt, and then that guy who came in and closed. They just couldn't get anything against the New York Mets bullpen.
Yeah, again, you know, I'm flushing it, moving on. I think they all should too. I thought it was a very weird game. It had the weird feeling from the second pitch of the game when Toddy hit that missile and he stuck his glove out and got it. So again, it's okay. It's all right. It's fine. You move on. Try to win a series.
Before the game, a report from A.J. Casavell. Jason Adam threw some long toss without pain, which is a good sign for him. Again, they're not expecting him back until probably into September, maybe almost mid-September. Not throwing off a mound or anything yet, but getting Jason Adam back, if he is healthy, would obviously be another boost to the San Diego Padres bullpen. But the biggest story yesterday in Padres land was the approval of the new owners, Kwanza Jones and Jose E. Feliciano, by the rest of Major League Baseball. And I liked, Woods, what they had to say in their statement. Now, it would be an incredible gaffe to mess up your written first statement to your new fan base.
I think so.
in that sense, you know, they met the minimum requirements here.
Like any PR firm should have been able to handle this one.
Yes, and they hire whoever they hire to help them write whatever, you know, they were going to write. Did a very nice job. And here's what they said. We are a family first, and becoming owners of the San Diego Padres means joining an even larger one. We're grateful to the Seidler family and especially to Peter for raising the expectations of what this franchise can achieve. We have built our life and our work together, and we will bring that same shared purpose, commitment, and determination to our stewardship of the Padres. It is a source of immense pride and an extraordinary opportunity to become part of a team, a tradition, and the San Diego community that has supported it so faithfully. And here's the big one. Our ambition is clear, to bring a World Series championship to San Diego and build an enduring organization capable of competing for championships year after year. We intend to be engaged owners, bringing our energy, experience, and perspective while working alongside the talented team already in place and investing ambitiously and thoughtfully in the Padres' future. That means pursuing excellence and innovation throughout the organization, delivering a first-class experience at Petco Park, deepening the bond with the faithful fans, and making a positive impact across the San Diego community. We are all in and committed to winning. All right. Well, they nailed that one.
Yep, crushed it.
10 out of 10, no notes.
Yeah, sure.
On your written statement to the San Diego Padres fan base.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the press conference to see what they say. Are you going to ask a question?
Don't know.
Ooh. Ooh.
I'm not doing it this time.
Yeah, probably at some point.
You will?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it yet. But, you know, that...
Ben, from 10 News?
Yes, 100%.
And 97.3 The Fan. Give both.
Yeah.
But...
should say Ben from 10 News and Ben and Woods.
Yeah. I mean, they hit on a lot of buzzwords. I mean, World Series Championship, that's obviously, check mark. Right. That's the number one. Competing for championships year after year.
Yep. Okay, good.
Engaged owners.
Good.
Working alongside the talented team already in place.
Good.
Investing ambitiously.
Oh, yeah.
And thoughtfully.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you? Spending money, right?
Of course.
On the roster. That's what that means to me when I hear something like that. First-class experience at Petco Park. Deepening the bond with faithful fans. Positive impact in the community. All in. Committed to winning.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that is PR 101, like a close to perfect statement. Now, you have to back it up with a lot of actions.
Correct.
Over a lot of years.
Once you lay out your roadmap, people are now, they have your roadmap. And they see the roadmap and they're like, well, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're not doing this, you're not doing this, you promised this, this, this. It's smart. Lays it out for you. You know exactly what to expect. And when it's not answered or done, then that gives people the avenue to say, you haven't really delivered on that promise. Now, the World Series Championship, you know, you're going to be legends if you can get that done here in San Diego, because nobody's ever been able to do it. So, of course, you have to say that. But now that you've said it, your actions have to meet your words.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, how much time before we can actually even start judging?
1 year. A year, 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to say, let's see what they're going to do in this offseason. But we know this offseason is going to be awfully weird and hard to judge.
Look at media already giving him a pass.
Yeah, no.
Extend Adrian Morihone in November?
Yeah, well, listen.
Before the lockout.
You've got, Tarek Skubal came out yesterday and said he wants a new deal signed before the new CBA is negotiated, right? So that puts the timeline on. So the season will end in October. It will end on October 31st officially if game seven of the World Series, if it goes to a game seven, it'll be on Halloween. So he is giving the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Padres, the Rangers, the Mariners 1 month to sign him to a new deal. I want to sign a new deal before December 1st, and which is, I would too. With a new CBA coming, right?
Especially if there could be provisions that prevent, you know, extended deals or maximum salaries in those contracts. Yeah, you would like to get that done and grandfathered in before a potential new CBA is ratified.
Yep, that's exactly right.
But there's going to be a lot of guys in free agents who feel that way. And I just think it's unlikely that we're going to see an extremely busy month of November transaction-wise before.
You think it's unlikely?
I think it's unlikely. I do. Yeah. I think owners are going to be very like, we don't know what the financial structure. Let's say they sign Tarek Skubal to a, you know, 10-year, $500 million contract. And then the new CBA says, all right, we're grandfathering those in, but we also have a salary cap. So now we have to reduce our salary by $170 million because we just added, they're gonna handcuff themselves. They can't really know or plan for the future with these big contracts without knowing what the CBA looks like. Is there going to be luxury tax? How is it all going to look? How do you sign a guy with no possible idea of what the consequences are with that much money? It just doesn't make any sense for someone to sign Tarek Skubal before.
Well, it makes sense
before the new CBA is ratified.
It makes sense if you want Tarek Skubal on your team, right? And you're like, I have to have Tarek Skubal.
But if it comes at the cost of 9 other players that you have to get rid of, you don't really want Tarek Skubal.
Who's that going to be?
Well, I mean, if the Dodgers are $280 million over a salary cap and signing Tarek Skubal puts them $330 million.
Just borrow more money from yourself and pay yourself off, whatever you're doing right now.
That may not be allowed under the new CBA. But, so I just don't know that they're going to be able to do that before a CBA is actually decided upon.
Yeah. I think
but that's not just true of the Dodgers. That'll be true of the Padres and every other team.
Yeah. Do you think it would be foolish to sign a Tarek Skubal?
Yes.
You do.
Before the CBA? Yeah, absolutely.
But then you have Tarek Skubal.
Yeah, but again, at what cost?
Whatever he wants. Like, if you want him and he's a part of your team.
You need a team around him, though.
Yeah, but
if
these
he
guys
can't
make,
afford a team around
these guys
him,
make
because
billions and billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah, but they may not be allowed to spend those billions of dollars under a new CBA.
Right, so you get to spend it now. You can spend it.
Yeah, but again, what if that counts against your CBA?
But it's if you sign it then before the new CBA,
we don't
it
know
won't.
That. We
it
don't
won't.
Know that.
It
no,
can't.
We don't. It can absolutely can.
How?
They can absolutely count salary.
Okay, fine. So you're
the Dodgers.
So you're telling me then Kyle Tucker's deal could be picked apart.
The Dodgers may have to go on a fire sale this offseason.
If they come up
with a salary cap and the Dodgers are $180 million over it, they will have to shed $180 million in payroll.
That's definitely a possible outcome.
That's what the owners want.
Well, they're saying
they're fighting for.
Well, they want to have to restructure all of their deals and cut payroll.
Yes.
By $180 million.
I don't know how much. I mean, that number is completely unknown at this point. But the Dodgers are so far above everybody else's payroll that if there is a salary cap, it would be very likely
so
that the Dodgers
knowing,
would have to go on
okay,
a fire
so
sale
that doesn't
of
make
getting
sense
rid of
because,
contracts.
So knowing this was coming,
yeah.
The CBA, the negotiations, why would you, on God's green earth, go out and pay $120 million
to win potentially three World Series.
This year.
Yeah.
Well, Kyle Tucker.
To win this World Series this year, too.
Edwin Diaz.
Yeah, to win this World Series.
But wait, you're still going to have to restructure all your deals?
Yeah,
that doesn't
be,
make any sense.
Well, they are going all in right now. And they will deal with the fallout of whatever the CBA is
Which
when it
is
happens.
Which is why I'm saying you signed Tarek Skubal before the thing and you deal with the fallout.
Yeah, but Tarek Skubal can't win you anything before the CBA.
No, but he can win you something in the future. Then you have Tarek Skubal, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. I just think that would be an incredibly risky thing to do without knowing what the financial consequences of it are.
Honestly, I think if
And that's not just for the Dodgers. That's
it's
anyone
for any
right
team.
Now. That's
like
for
if
any
the Yankees
right
went
now.
Out and signed him or the Mets went out and signed Tarek Skubal, made him a huge offer. I think you worry about the Piper later in a deal like that. Doesn't then, if you wait, doesn't it open Tarek Skubal then up to maybe other teams?
Sure.
Like, that's
yeah, it does.
The thing. If you want him, go get him.
It does.
That's what I'm talking
about. I mean, I think
about.
A team like the Pirates, like that has plenty of salary cap, actually could go and sign someone right now.
That's the
whereas
thing.
Whereas the teams that are up above a potential salary cap are going to have to be really careful in November.
Which is, we all have this grand vision of a salary cap system, and guys like Tarek Skubal being like, I'm going to go pitch in Pittsburgh, right? It's just they still have to want to go there. They've earned their free agency. They're still going to go to the big markets where they're treated fairly and well. You know, money may not be everything with a new CBA. I don't know, but I'm of the opinion of you have a chance to sign Tarek Skubal and you really want Tarek Skubal, I'd get him before this thing goes
now,
down.
You can,
I would.
There may be no salary cap and they can be just fine. And that would be a gamble that they could take. But I'm just saying it is a gamble to sign anyone in November without knowing what the CBA looks like. All right.
Well, then they took a lot of gambles this year.
We will take a quiet timeout when we come back. The Ketel Marte situation. Again, Arizona dealing with this during a pennant race. We'll hear Torey Lovello's response to one of his key players going missing before the opener to a series against the Boston Red Sox. That's coming up next. Broadcasting live from our Bill House studios, we know how. It's Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. You know, when your baseball team is in the hunt, every decision matters, like sending a runner at third base. Preparation shows up, mistakes get magnified. That's the same mindset people need heading into retirement. Once you're close, there's less room for error. Market downturns, inflation, or poor timing can have a bigger impact. That's why Trajan Wealth helps people prepare before it's crunch time. TRAJANWealth.com. Their fiduciary advisors help build income and investment strategies designed to weather volatility so you're not reacting under pressure. They're local, independent, and right here in San Diego with offices in Liberty Station, Carlsbad, and Escondido. So if retirement is getting closer, now is the time to be proactive. You can start by calling 1-855-TRAJAN1. That's 1-855-TRAJAN1. Or just go online at TRAJANWealth.com. Trajan Wealth, plan smarter, dream bigger. Advisory services through Trajan Wealth LLC. Additional services through Trajan Estate and Trajan Tax. Actual client, paid advertisement, additional disclosures at TRAJANWealth.com.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why? How many times do I have to tell you?
Oh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Ben and Woods brought to you by David P. Shapiro, criminal defense attorneys, helping good people regain control of their future when charged with a crime since 2010. Visit DavidPShapiroLaw.com. We got Jesse Agler coming up after the bottom of the hour, but right now, Woodsy, going to kick things off on Don't Do This.
Man, this is, I don't know how much sports adjacent it is. It may be. It may end up, you may end up finding out more about it, but there was a huge story that broke out of Penn State University yesterday. 14 people accused of drug trafficking were students at University Park, including one father that tried to obstruct the investigation. Ben, what they were getting charged for is drug trafficking. Large amounts of cocaine, kilos, were brought in from Philadelphia and New York to State College, where they were cut and packaged for sale primarily to Penn State students. In fact, it was one fraternity that had their pledges, pledge season right now, cutting and packaging cocaine, sitting in a room like you see in the movies with the masks on and just cutting and bagging all of this blow to send out.
I always wondered how accurate those movies are.
They're very accurate. You don't want people putting it in their clothes. So they would make the women topless and have the masks on, and they would just package.
And you don't want to be breathing it all day.
Correct.
That's probably not good
all
for your health.
The cutting agents and all of that. But yeah, man, they are. It was the Delta Upsilon and Sigma Chi fraternity houses. Packaging was done by fraternity brothers and oftentimes pledges. 14 guys are really in a lot of trouble. And you see the mugshots, and it looks like you and your friends in college. I mean, it's just they look like the most normal dudes you could ever find, and they were running a massive, massive drug ring.
San Diego State had a huge drug bust.
I, for one, am shocked that there was illicit narcotics on college campuses in this country.
The one at San Diego State was right before I got here, a couple years before I got there, and they were still dealing with all the repercussions.
Still talking about it.
Oh, yeah. They're like, oh, yeah, that fraternity, they got in big trouble.
Call Us Today says, Penn State likes a good scandal. They do. They like a good scandal every now and then.
I feel like Upsilon is kind of the funniest.
It is Upsilon, isn't it?
There's an Epsilon and an Upsilon.
Is it Oops, not Upsilon?
Upsilon, I'm not sure.
Oop.
I'm not fluent in Greek.
Upsilon.
But,
man.
There's like the cool ones like Sigma and Alpha.
Ligma.
All right.
Epsilon. There's Epsilon
and Upsilon. Yeah, there's both of them.
Yeah.
Believe.
Yep.
I want to couch this next Don't Do This in terms that I think we all have empathy for Ketel Marte, who has gone through some stuff. I remember last year coming out of the All-Star break, his home in the Dominican Republic was broken into.
Yes.
Seemed like he was very worried about it and decided not to report to the Arizona Diamondbacks for the start of the second half of the season. They had to place him on the restricted list. It created quite the kind of controversy and furor in Phoenix, but he ended up coming back to the team. They did try to trade him in the offseason. They were unable to do so. I think there is some hesitancy, as talented as Ketel Marte is, that other teams were not necessarily willing to jump in. They were also talking about maybe trading him at the deadline, but the Diamondbacks were still in it, and he's a very good player, so they ended up keeping him. He also got, I think, his 10-5 rights this year, which means he can veto any trade, which makes this story very concerning for the Arizona Diamondbacks, because Ketel Marte, who traveled with the team from Atlanta to Boston after their series against the Braves, they were opening up a new series against the Boston Red Sox last night, just didn't show up for the game. AWOL, absent without leave for the second time in two seasons, which, of course, prompted the Arizona Diamondbacks to once again place him on the restricted list.
The reporting was very vague early on with all of this, and when we started talking about it via text, going, "What's going on?" I'm like, "Do they even know if he's okay? Like, did something happen to him? Is he missing, or
really
is he in his hotel room and they know he's there? He just didn't make it to the ballpark."
It was really weird because he posted like the view of landing in Boston on his Instagram, like
the night before.
Yeah, the night before, like we're landing in Boston, and then, you know, by all accounts, they expected him to be at the game yesterday. The doo-doo this for me.
D-D mega doo-doo.
I think goes to his skipper, Tori Lavullo, who I think we all love and respect very mm-hmm. much. We had him on the show one time, and he was fantastic. One of the top five interviews I think we've ever had. And you can hear it in his voice how concerned he is for a guy that he loves very much. And just listen to him speak about what went down.
Earlier today, the lineup came out 15 minutes prior to the game, and then we saw that Cattell went on the restricted list. Can you take us through what happened?
Yeah, it's been a crazy day. All I know is that he's dealing with a personal issue. We're trying to figure that out, and you know, he didn't show up today, and he was put on the restricted list. That's as much as I know right now. I'm sure in time we'll start to uncover and unravel some information, but. Yeah, I knew that there was something going on today when I met with you guys, but I still believe he was going to be here, and he just didn't show up.
Did you have communication with him?
Very little this morning, this afternoon, and yeah, I just was doing my best to reach out to him, and there's very little coming back.
He's here, though, in Boston? Is he here?
I believe so. I'm not sure.
How disappointing is it that the communication wasn't relayed to you earlier?
We deal with a lot as baseball managers and coaches and teachers. So, you know, sometimes you get disappointed. Sometimes you get let down. But we're gonna figure out how to work through this.
I know he had the restricted list placement last year because mm-hmm. he had issues where he hasn't showed up on time.
No, this is the first time.
As far as you saw that have a bigger impact on the clubhouse, how do you feel the players responded to that?
You know, the players are gritty. They rally around one another. I know there was a lot of discussions about it at different points in time in the clubhouse today. There was a lot of curiosity. You know, we care for Cattell. And, you know, once we knew he was okay, I think everybody relaxed and started to focus on the game. But, you know, what was the final score, 10-1?
11-1.
I mean, we got our ass kicked. We got to be better.
What do you think is the way forward for Cattell?
I don't know. Just care for him and love him.
When did you start to get an inkling that this might be? How did it come about where you realized he might not?
When I woke up this morning. I want to keep that private, though.
You seem a little emotional. Are you worried?
No, not really. I love him and I care for him. It'll be okay.
Man, that is just, it's heart-wrenching. You know, we talk a lot on this show about players and as robots, you know, and they're not, certainly, and it's a really fine example of that.
Didn't
right?
we had Tori Lavullo on last year, shortly after, wasn't it Cattell Marte that was getting heckled by a fan?
He was in tears on the field after his fan said something about his mother who had died in a car accident in 2017.
Yeah.
And we talked about it, you know. And
as a fellow emotional human being, I can certainly sympathize with Cattell Marte and what he's going
through. You know, it does make you realize if Cattell Marte was working in any other job.
Oh, yeah.
All you'd have to do is say, hey, I got a personal thing. I need to take a couple of days.
100%.
And no one would care. But because
can you take the equipment with you?
Because he's in a pennant race and every game is so critical and he could be the difference between the team making the postseason and not making the postseason.
I know your uncle died, but we have a round table.
Yeah,
can you just, be on the round table? Not showing up for a day is going to be a huge story.
Yeah,
and,
of course it is.
You know, it's not necessarily entirely fair. He's allowed to have emotions and allowed to have bad days and maybe need a mental health day here or two. It'd be shocking if no baseball player on every team didn't need some mental health days every now and then.
They give guys days off they gave Kyle Tucker, you know, a day off the other day just to reset his mind because he was so bad at home. And they said, you're sitting, you know, I could see it in your eyes. Dave Roberts said, like, I'm sitting you. You're going to sit and watch a baseball game, you know, and that happens all the time. It's just different in that it sounded like something between the time they landed and checked into the hotel led to some sort of text in the morning to his manager that kind of let him know this is where I'm at, and it's not great.
Yeah.
And that you know, makes me really sad. I hate that for Ketel. I like Ketel Marte. I think he's a really good player. I think he plays hard. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you're super bummed if you're his teammates because, well, you're in a fight. You're in a dog fight, and one of your dogs isn't there, and that bums you out. But also, it's your teammate. You're there for him. If something happened to one of you guys, mm-hmm. as much as I'd miss you on the show, I'd be like, you got to get your head right first. Like, that comes way before this or that, you know, in my opinion. It I does, agree. And it's bigger than sports. With such a proliferation of men taking their own lives, men not talking about their feelings, with men dealing with things with substances instead of talking it out, take your time, dude. And it's not just because we're against you guys in a pennant race. It's because I think these guys need to be looked at as human beings more than they are.
And that is Don't and Do Do This for a Tuesday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Now we got back-to-back Padres guests coming up. Jesse Agler will join us from New York. And then Padres CEO Eric Grubner talking about the new ownership approved yesterday. All coming up with Ben and Woods. Don't go away. San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. As I mentioned, get back-to-back Padres guests. Eric Grubner will join us at the top of the hour. So let's get right to Jesse Agler on our SDCCU fan hotline. It's not Big Bank Banking. It is better. Joining us from the Big Apple.
Live from New York.
Where you make at least one trip to New York every year. Sometimes two if the Padres also play at the Yankees. Those trips a little different than some of the other ones when you go to New York City, Jesse?
Yeah, I mean, I have like friends and family reaching out every 30 seconds, so it becomes very stressful and hectic. So yes,
plus all the, you know, dealing with the city and everything, it's a little bit different than probably going to Kansas City or Minneapolis or something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, there are definitely some things that are the same no matter where you are, like the cadence and the rhythm of the season. Like you get on a bus, you go to the ballpark and all that. But there's no doubt, like New York has a unique energy. I think anybody who's been here knows that. You know, and, you know, Citi Field, Yankee Stadium, they're big and they're loud. Even when the team is not that good, it does feel, you know, like a little bit bigger for whatever reason. There's something about New York. There's no doubt about it. And, I, you know, I love coming here. I love the city. And, you know, no day off or anything here, kind of like right in from Cleveland. We got in late at night after the rain delay. So you could almost forget you're in New York until you step outside. But yeah, I'm a huge fan. And, that was quite a game last night.
Quite,
you know, it's one of those,
a game.
You never know what you're going to see.
I was just going to bring up my favorite Jesse Agler. You can watch baseball, you know, for 10, 20 years. You will not see, you'll see things on a nightly basis you've never seen before. I thought that was one of them. Question before we get into the crazy first couple of innings, Jesse, did you get a chance to check in with Andy Green?
I did.
How did that go?
It went great. I had a wonderful conversation with Andy during Mets batting practice. He's a peach. I'd actually seen him last year for the first time in a while. He'd been their farm director, you know, prior to this sort of temporary elevation to manager. And they had said, David Stearns, their head of baseball operations, again yesterday said, Andy will not be their manager next year.
Oh, wow.
He keeps saying this publicly. They're very firm about this. They said it when they gave him this job. They said it again yesterday. He's going to go back to being like their farm director next year. They really like him in that role. Now, look, if they make some kind of miraculous run and end up in the playoffs, I imagine they're going to have to reassess that. I think that's still a very short, you know, possibility. But, you know, they keep saying publicly he will not be the manager next year. So, you know, I think he's very loose because of that. I think his team is very loose because of that. I think that's a big part of why they're playing as well as they are. But because he was their farm director last year, he was randomly doing his like once a year press conference about the state of their minor league system when we were here, coincidentally. So I popped in just to kind of like mess with him a little bit and like give him dirty looks. And so, you know, I caught up with him after that. We had a really nice chat. He's a fine man and all that. And obviously spent a lot of time with him when he was the Padre manager. So we caught up last year when we were here. And so, you know, that was nice. And then, yeah, we talked during BP yesterday and kind of got the lay of the land about everything that was going on with the Mets and, you know, talked about family and that kind of thing too. So it was good to see him. And obviously, look, they're now 23-22 since he took over. Yeah. And that team was in a world of hurt, as I think everybody knows before that. So, you know, certainly a ton of credit to him.
Four straight. They won four straight. Yeah.
Yeah, they're hot. Now, take us through the first two innings from your perspective, Jesse. Just kind of how you saw it unfold on the field. As I think Kevin Acey did the research back to 1920. Never had a team thrown out three times at home plate in the first two innings in baseball.
Yes.
We had that on the broadcast, and I think the fourth inning last night, we were able to dig that one out.
Nice.
Yeah, look at us. We might have stolen it from the Mets TV broadcast, but we had it on our broadcast.
Perfect.
Yeah. That's how the great ones do it. So, I mean, the first one, it was like, you know, it was fresh in my head. The bench had gotten somebody on the Nationals both Saturday and Sunday. So, like, that was the first thing I'm thinking is, like, you know, he can do this, right? And that throw was crazy. I hadn't necessarily seen in real time that Jake had held up the way he did between second and third because I'm tracking the ball, right? So I'm looking at the ball. I'm following it into right field, you know, and I see the throw come in. And now next thing I see is that Jake's out by 5 feet. Then obviously you look at the replays and you go, oh, man, you know, probably in a perfect world, you're holding him there, you know, because he wasn't going all the way. Plus you're about to have bases loaded. Nolan McClain's obviously on the ropes. He's not settled in. He's not right at all. So that was kind of my read on the first one. You know, then the second one, it's like, all right, he's going to have to make a perfect throw, but it's like, holy, I can't believe this just happened again. Like, or are you serious? And then, you know, Camusano gets forced at the plate. That one almost feels like, you know, a cruel joke, right? Oh, another out at home. Right. Awesome. And then, you know, the last one, I see Xander going through the stop sign. But you're like in your head, you're like, all right, at least it's not Benj. Cause it's in left field this time. But also like my thought as I'm looking out to left field is, boy, Ewing sure looks shallow. And, you know, sure enough, you know, there it goes. But look, I mean, how often do those guys actually make those throws that accurately? And furthermore, how often does the catcher actually handle those throws so well? That was the piece I felt like actually maybe we all kind of like took a little bit for granted last night is that Alvarez, like, not only handled the throws, but got the tags down really well. Like, I feel like so often in today's game, we see catchers not do that piece of it. Now, the Cronenworth one obviously is a little bit different because he was out by 5 feet. But, like, you know, so often, you know, on those short hops, it kicks off the catcher's mitt or, you know, he's not in a great position. But Alvarez, I thought, handled, you know, all of them really, really well. And, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the outfield assist. It's, I think, one of the most exciting plays in baseball when an outfielder, you know, makes a great throw home. And, I mean, it was crazy. I mean, you know, we're all sitting here going, man, I can't remember the last time, you know, I've seen that, and it's because none of us have ever seen it. It was 126 years ago. So, I mean, it was a heck of a thing. It really was. And, you know, unfortunately for the Padres, you know, I think Tony was on it. It was like maybe the bottom of the second inning, and he's like, you know, look, if Nolan McClain settles in, Padres are really going to rue this. And sure enough, you know, he's the caliber of guy that can really settle in. He did, and, you know, you almost had it somewhere in the back of your mind that, like, man, that could have been the game, you know, in those first two innings, and that turned out to be the case.
I thought, for sure, based on, you know, again, we were talking about, I believe in this team certainly a lot more than I did 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I believe in this offense. And it bothered me, obviously, because you hate to run in outs like that, but I thought, oh, no problem, we'll come back, we always do, and they didn't, and, you know, decent effort, I guess, but, you know, to be able to flush it today, still got to go out and win today and win tomorrow to win a series. Yeah. It's just of the utmost importance for the San Diego Padres, Jesse, to keep winning series as best they can because, you know, it certainly doesn't get any easier. And you know, the Phillies look like they've rounded into form a little bit. I thought they would kind of tail away. Diamondbacks got some issues going on right now, but, you know, they're still a scary team. You know, this team can't really afford to be kicking games like that, but hey, man, it's over. You flush it and go out and try to win a ball game. I thought Walker Buehler pitched his tail off last night. He was outstanding.
No, he was great. He was great. You know, he had his kind of like what's become almost his pseudo-typical weird inning. It was early, and then he got right into it, and that was great. And yeah, it definitely hurts, you know, to always, you know, you say like to waste, quote-unquote, you know, a start like that from your guy. But it would have hurt a lot more a few weeks ago, you know, when it felt like the Padres couldn't buy a start like that.
Yep.
But now all of a sudden you're sort of, you know, knock on wood, routinely seeing 5 or 6 outings out of your starting pitchers, right? So, you know, now it maybe doesn't feel as painful to lose a game in which your starter does that because it's becoming a little bit more of a regularity. So I think it's good. Look, I'm not necessarily where you are in terms of like, oh my gosh, we have to win, you know, the next two after dropping that one. It was a tough loss, no doubt about it. That's a weird, tough way to lose a game. I still think, look, there's 5.5 weeks left in this season. They're playing good baseball. I'm not into like desperation win every game mode right now. I think, you know, this team is is playing good enough baseball. I think there's enough baseball left that I have confidence that, you know, as long as they generally take care of their business, they're going to be in the position they need to be in, you know, going into that last week of the season.
I'm not quite desperate yet, but yeah. It's more of like, hey, you go on.
Sounded a little desperate.
No. I wasn't even mad. I literally wasn't
okay
mad. I was good.
One, Jesse.
I was like, fine, it happened.
I'll tell you if he was, and yeah, I don't think he was. Probably was a little more mad. So yesterday I'm grabbing some lunch, and I flip on a MLB radio on my car, and lo and behold, who do I hear on with Ryan Spielborgs and CJ Nitkowski, other than Jesse Agler, doing an interview from New York? And thought
now,
it was
before you go on, I want you to know,
yeah,
they tried to give me an incorporator word, and I rejected it outright. I did.
Oh,
not,
they did. I didn't hear the end.
No.
So
no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
So I thought you made a really good point, though. And they asked you about Craig Stammen and how he's done as manager. And I think Woods and I have sort of talked about this a little bit, but you went on and talked about how, you know, Craig kind of had to be talked into the job and how family's still a huge priority for him. And he's not the kind of person who manages as though he cares, like if his job's on the line. And that actually could be his greatest quality, that he can manage unafraid because he didn't necessarily want the job in the first place. And it is almost like frees him up to make the right decisions where, you may criticize it, but I truly believe in what I am doing. And I don't really care what you think. Did I kind of get the gist of what you were saying there?
Yeah, I think that's it. It's almost like his secret superpower, right? Is that, you know, I think so many big league managers, right? You know, they either, this is all they've wanted to do their entire lives or all they've wanted to do since they retired. The job means everything to them, right? And I respect that. That's not a shot at anybody. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, if you're going to have that mentality about a job, and by the way, that's my mentality about my job. So
same.
I'm not
casting
stones here. Like, you know, I've wanted this job since I was 5 years old. So, you know, when you feel that way about a job, you're going to have a certain mentality about that job. You're going to behave a certain way about that job. You're going to value that job a certain way. And that's going to sort of color the way you handle yourself and that job. And you're going to be kind of tight, you know, in a lot of ways because of that. And Craig's kind of the opposite. Like you said, AJ kind of had to talk him into taking the job or taking the interview for the job even. And so, you know, this does not mean everything to him. His family means everything to him. His faith means everything to him. Things are bigger than this for Craig Stammen. You know, a lot of people talk about having perspective. Craig actually does have perspective. Like, you know, he walks the walk when it comes to that. And so, yeah, like he's not gonna, like he cares. I'm not saying he doesn't care. I'm not saying he isn't competitive. I want to make sure I make that perfectly clear. You know, this does mean something to him. He wants to win. He is a fiery competitor. But, you know, it has freed him up, you know, because it doesn't mean everything in the world to him, to just go out and do the job the way he thinks it should be done. And he's not going to overthink it. He's not going to worry about it too much. You know, he's not going to kill himself, you know, over every single little thing. He's just going to go out and be free and do it. And, you know, I think, again, that's kind of like a secret superpower for him. And it's probably different than 28, if not 29 other major league managers, because he's just coming at it from a completely different place than everybody else. And, you know, I would have never been able to sort of dream that up going into an interview process for a manager, like, hey, maybe let's find somebody who doesn't really want this job. Maybe that can be, you know, like a great benefit to them. But it's a really interesting thing. And, you know, I'm not a human resources professional. I'm not a corporate recruiter. But I do wonder if there's like something there that, you know, people who hire people for a living, you know about, that maybe, you know, you look for somebody who's, you know, maybe from a little bit of a different, you know, place from the job you're trying to hire from, or a little bit of a different background, you know, that all that kind of stuff. If there is something there, maybe, you know, in terms of looking for somebody when you're trying to fill a role that they can bring value because of that. It's very interesting to me. It really is.
Before he gives you the incorporator word, it reminds me of you can't say it on the radio, but Luis Camposano's entire message for this year. I just stopped giving an F. That's it.
Like, when did Fernando start hitting home runs? When he said, I'm going to stop worrying about not hitting
home
runs.
That's it. It's just weird, man, and especially in that sport. That sport, maybe of all the sports, is like you almost have to look like you don't care. It's just very weird. Yeah. So, all right, Ben.
All right, tough Paulie, just quickly, let's get to it.
Tuft Hunter,
Jesse.
Tuft Hunter.
It's a British slang term for a social climber or snob who tries hard to be friends with wealthy or titled people. A tuft hunter.
Tuft hunter.
That's a great word.
It's a great word. Never heard it before.
Tuft hunter.
Tuft hunter.
Can I give you guys an incorporator to use in the Grubner interview?
Yes.
Oh, oh yeah. God, wow. Yeah.
I'm kidding.
No, no, do it.
It's an ownership interview.
Yeah, let's do it.
That's true. Now we actually have to keep moving because Eric's probably standing by and ready. So, Jesse, appreciate it. We'll hear from you at 4:10 Pacific today.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
All right, Jesse Agler, voice of the San Diego Padres. And, yeah, we are going to turn right around. And when we come back at the top of the hour, Padres CEO Eric Grubner with the new ownership coming in. Get his thoughts on yesterday's approval and more. Coming up next with Ben Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.